talking about interacting topological insiders in three dimensions, and everything that I'll talk about is contained in these two papers. This one just appeared this week, and this is on the archive. So I'm privileged to work with two really brilliant students. Chung Wong is a student of mine at MIT. That is only in name a student. I pay him, but we're really collaborators. And Drew Porter used to be a student at MIT, is now a postdoc at Berkeley. And some of the work relies on insights that we got from various previous collaborations with famous people, some of whom were here, and some of whom were supposed to be here. So I had to run through the introduction because first, I don't have time. And second, I think this audience is much more expert on everything that's there in the introduction than any other audience that I might talk to. So topological insulators, last many years, a lot of progress in understanding the possibility of non-trivial band insulators, which have protected surface states in the presence of symmetry. And so I'm going to be focusing exclusively on three dimensions. In 3D, the topological band insulator requires spin-orbit coupling, which destroys conservation of all components of spin, but preserves time reversal. Okay? So there's two distinct insulating phases in the presence of time reversal within band theory in three dimensions. So there's a picture that you all presumably seen many times. So the interesting property of topological insulators that one focuses on is the characterization of its surface state. So the topological insulator has a non-trivial surface state. And for these band insulators, these surface states have gapless excitations that are protected by some symmetry. There's the quantum spin Hall in 2D, or this famous odd number of Dirac cones in 3D. So the second version of topological insulators, which is what this talk will be about, is about strongly correlated topological insulators. In particular, we want to ask the question of the situation with interaction-dominated phases, interaction-dominated insulators. Can they be in some analog of topological insulator? And this requires moving away from the crutch of free fermion Hamiltonians and band topology that that underlies all most of the discussions of topological insulation in the literature. Okay. So let's write down some obvious questions, conceptual questions that come to mind in thinking about interacting topological insulators. Perhaps the most interesting question, at least to me, is whether there are new phases that have no non-interacting counterpart, right? Phases that cannot be smoothly deformed into a band insulator. Okay. For instance, there's a lot of attention now on topological condo insulators and things like that. So those will not be new phases in this sense. They do have a non-interacting counterpart. There is some free fermion band structure, highly renormalized from microscopic band structure that describes these materials. Right? So here we are asking about new phases that do not admit such a non-interacting description and a topological insulator, what the physical properties are, what the experimental realization is. So this question, as it's posed, needs some refinement because there's many different ways in which one can generalize the concept of a topological insulator to interacting systems. So how should we go about doing it? Right? So let me write down some simple guidelines. First, let's focus on the same realistic symmetries as the ones that protect the topological band insulator, namely charge conservation and time reversal. And more specifically, it's that's U1 semi-direct time reversal, which describes ordinary electrons. So that's a realistic symmetry. And the, Topological band insulating faces have simple bulk excitations, there's no fractionalization or exotic statistics. More precisely, what Shogang would call short-range entangled faces. So the minimal generalization of a topological band insulator to interacting systems is to focus on interacting systems with the same symmetries as the ones that protect the topological band insulator with the bulk gap, and demand that just like the topological band insulator, you have no exotic bulk excitations that is faced with short-range entanglement, and then ask what can happen. Now, if we remove these restrictions, there'll be a richer set of answers. For instance, you can have these fractional topological insulators that Michael and others, Brian and the room have worked on. But the zeroth order thing that happens is this quantum spin liquid-like order, the long-range entanglement. Right? And the topological insulation is an additional twist. So we won't worry about those kinds of phases here. So to emphasize, if you're talking about gap phase of matter, you can distinguish, you should distinguish phases with intrinsic topological order from phases which those kinds of phases would be characterized as having long-range quantum entanglement. And topological band insulators do not have this intrinsic topological order, and would fall into the category of short-range entangled. So we are interested in generalizations of topological insulators to interacting systems, which are also short-range entangled. Right? So a refined question is the following. So we are interested in phases and properties of interacting short-range entangled electronic topological insulators with realistic symmetries. Okay. And so the terminology for these kinds of phases is SPT. Symmetry protected topological faces. So I discovered that the T that we have in my institute twice a week, the water heater for that has a label. It's called SPT. Maybe that's where you got Shogang got his inspiration from. Because for a long time he didn't know what to do with the T. So it came in many flavors. All right, so this is the outline of the rest of the talk. I'm going to give a lightning review of the ancient topic of free fermion topological insulators in 3D. And then I'm going to give a lightning review of the not quite ancient, but fairly old topic of bosonic topological insulators in 3D. So there was this emergence and entanglement conference in May here. Many of you in the room participated, as did I. And at that point, this all I talked about, and it's quite amazing to me, while preparing this talk, that we made all this progress in the last 9 months, and certainly at the time of the last emergence and entanglement conference, I basically had no clue. If anyone had asked me about any of these, I would have said, too hard, forget about it. But there's been dramatic progress, and that's what I really want to talk about. So I want to talk about 3D interacting electronic TIs, and I want to show that there's a new Z2Q classification these faces once you include interactions. I want to describe the properties of these new interacting TIs. So then I'll very briefly mention very recent work with Chong on 3D, on the generalization of this classification to other symmetries, various topological insulators and topological superconductors. That goes beyond the famous tenfold way classification of the free fermion insulators. And finally, I probably won't say anything about this unless someone asks me. This body of work is giving us, I think, reasonable ideas on going towards materials and predicting, at least guessing, possible materials. Okay. The free fermion 3D topological insulators, we characterize them with the presence or absence of surface states, or through the electromagnetic response, and the surface has these odd number of Dirac cones, which cannot be trivially gapped or localized at the surface, so long as you preserve the symmetries. That usually people say, so long as you preserve time reversal, but strictly speaking, you also need to preserve charge conservation. Can't deposit a superconductor on the surface. The electromagnetic response is best understood in terms of a surface quantum Hall effect that obtains if you, say, deposit a ferromagnet at the surface of the topological insulator. So if you deposit a ferromagnet at the surface, or you turn on a weak magnetic field, you can gap out these Dirac cones. And if you manage to do that, then the surface will develop a Hall conductivity that shifted from an integer by a half. So the meaning of this half is that if you form a domain wall between two opposite T-breaking regions, when you deposit a ferromagnet, you create a domain wall of that ferromagnet, then right at that domain wall, there is a gapless kind of fermion edge mode. The same edge as the edge of the 2D integer for the pulse. Ah, very good. This is a great day for me. I'll keep talking. You keep.
Go ahead, man.
So a different way to think about the surface quantum Hall effect was introduced by Shou-Liang Chi, Taylor Hughes, and Xiuqing Zhang, and elaborated by Joel Moore's group. So if you think about the bulk electromagnetic response of any three-dimensional insulator, there's the Maxwell term, of course, but there's also the possibility of this theta term, E dot B term, which comes with some coefficient that's conventionally written in this form. And since E and B transform oppositely under time reversal, under time reversal, theta goes to minus theta. And furthermore, there's periodicity under theta going to theta plus 2 pi, so that only theta equals n pi is consistent at time reversal. Now, one can argue that if you form a domain wall between this bulk insulator and the trivial vacuum, which has theta equals 0, then in the domain wall, this theta term implies a surface quantum Hall effect of theta over 2 pi, which then supports the identification made by these people that the free fermion Ti has theta equals pi, right? Because we saw that we know that the free fermion Ti has the surface quantum Hall effect shifted from integer by a half. So this relating this to the surface quantum Hall effect gives you an interpretation of the periodicity. If you shift theta by 2 pi, then the surface Hall effect changes by an integer, but that simply corresponds to depositing a 2D integer quantum Hall state at the surface. So it's not a distinct bulk state. So it's another consequence of, so this is called the axion response. There's another consequence of the axion response, which is known as the Witten effect. So if you have a Maxwell theory with this kind of theta term, and then you imagine for conceptual purposes, introducing a magnetic monopole in this magnetic field, then what this term implies is that that monopole carries an electric charge, theta over 2 pi. The derivation is totally trivial. I don't know why it needed the genius of Witten, but this knows the Witten effect, and some people, including me, call these kinds of monopoles Witten dions. Okay. So that was my review of the free fermion topological insulator in 3D. Next, let me talk about bosonic topological insulators. So as usual in correlated electron physics, bosons are easier problem to solve than fermions. And in this case, indeed, the bosonic examples were the first things to be understood in some detail. And what emerged from understanding bosons, the possibility of topological insulators of bosons, which clearly must be strongly interacting, are new and many new and useful non-perturbative ideas to think about the phenomenon of topological insulation without relying on this crutch of band theory. The old example of this kind of phase is the Haldane spin one chain, has the symmetry protected dangling spin half head states. In D bigger than one, I guess in D equals one, large numbers of people classified all such possible phases. But really, the field took off from my bird's eye view, the field took off in D bigger than one after the paper by Zheng Cheng and Shou Gang and Xie Chen proposing a classification of all such phases using the concept of group cohomology. And a simpler John Simon's approach in two dimensions by Ashwin and Yuanming Liu, which enabled people like me to actually enter the field. I mean, I still don't understand what group cohomology is. So what we'll need from this work on boson topological insulators is some physical ideas on three-dimensional bosonic topological insulators, or SPT states. Right? So let me very, very quickly summarize, you know, the physics of 3D boson topological insulators. So first, and bosons also have a quantized magnetoelectric effect if there's a conserved U1 charge. And the corresponding axion angle, however, must be 2 pi or 0, and think, but not pi, in the presence of time reversal symmetry. Whether 0 is allowed or not depends on how the time reversal is realized, whether it's U1 semi-direct or U1 direct. Another aspect of the physics of these bosonic topological insulators is that what makes the surface special, right, is the following thing. If you, any boson system, if you think about it, the surface of a three-dimensional system, it's a two-dimensional system of bosons, it can always be in a superfluid state, thereby breaking the U1 symmetry spontaneously. So why can't we disorder this superfluid and get a trivial insulator? So the obstruction to disordering this superfluid comes in the form of a non-trivial structure of the vortices. Right? So the vortices either transform non-trivially under some remaining global symmetry, such as, for instance, Kramers. They transform as Kramers in a time reversal, or the vortices are fermionic. In all these cases, there's an obstruction to simply condensing a vortex and getting a trivial insulator. Right? So that kind of thing, thinking about the boson topological insulator along these lines has been very fruitful, and you know, that leads one to a fairly comprehensive understanding of the universal properties of the bosonic topological insulator. And closely related to the exotic structure of vortices at the surface is the exotic structure of external bulk monopoles that you may introduce in an external electromagnetic field. They may also be, they basically inherit the same exoticity as the vortices. They could be fermionic or they could be Kramers, depending on what the vortex of the surface is doing. And I don't know if Max talked about this yesterday, but Max and Matthew and Charlie Kane have a very nice use of this exotic bulk monopole in one of these cases where it's a fermion to constrain the surface theory. For many of these boson topological insulators, certainly in all the standard examples that many of us have studied, can be explicitly constructed in a system of coupled layers by starting with discrete Z2 gauge theory in each layer and then coupling it in some way and then confining the bulk to leave behind some exotic surface. So these are things that we've learned or found useful in talking about bosons. It turns out that the same three kinds of phenomena are extremely powerful in enabling us to make enormous progress in understanding fermionic topological insulators and superconductors as well. And I'll give you many examples of the use of these things, you know, these ways of thinking about topological insulators in talking about interacting electronic topological insulators and superconductors. So one idea that came out of studying these boson SPTs, which maybe Max talked about yesterday, I should have looked up your talk, I didn't do that, is that a three-dimensional boson topological insulator, or more generally an SPT face of bosons, its boundary, which is two-dimensional, can be gapped while preserving all symmetries, but the price you pay for that is that the boundary has intrinsic topological order. This intrinsic topological ordered state, what's unusual about it is that it realizes symmetry anomalously, meaning it realizes symmetry in a manner that's prohibited in strictly two-dimensional systems. So if you have a 2D gap quantum spin liquid with the same topological order, it will never be able to realize the symmetry in the way that the surface realizes, the surface of the 3D SPT realizes. Now it turns out that this is actually very practical from a conceptual theoretical point of view. Targeting this sort of unusual intrinsically topologically ordered surface has been very, very fruitful in microscopic constructions of these bosonic topological insulators, so boson SPT faces. The couple layer construction that Chong Wong came up with is an example of that. That's a very nice work from the Berkeley group on constructing constructing one example of a bosonic topological superconductor. Okay, so that's the review. So now let me talk about the real stuff, electronic topological insulators. You know, for solid state physicists, this is the real stuff. Well, we have the cold atoms people around, I'm sorry. So what's the problem? Let me re-emphasize the problem. We're looking for electronic insulators with no bulk topological order or fractionalization, you know, short-range entangled. And we're interested in realistic symmetries. You know, this is the first problem one should solve, you know, the charge conservation, time reversal. Most insulators, you know, have these symmetries. We'll put in spin orbit, but later we'll see that we can, you know, we don't really need to worry about spin orbit. In band theory, there's a Z2 classification. So beyond band theory, we're asking about this question in the context of strongly correlated insulators with strong spin orbit coupling. How many such short-range entangled faces are there with strong interactions, and what are their physical properties? Right? So that's the question. So here's the answer. Let me give you the answer first. Right? So the claim is that there's a Z2 cube classification, so it corresponds to a total of 8 distinct faces. So because it's Z2 cubed, all these 8 faces can be generated from 3 root faces, and then by taking combinations. So let me describe what these 3 root faces are. One of them is just the familiar topological band insulator, which survives the presence of interactions. It's stable to including interactions. So it exists as an interacting, as a phase, as a quantum phase of an interacting electron system. And the other 2 root faces are new faces, which can be thought of as electronic Mott insulators, where the spins themselves have formed a spin SPT phase. So I'd like to call them, using the same abuse of terminology as topological insulators, like to call them topological paramagnets, to be distinguished from their more illustrious cousins, the quantum spin liquids. Right? So these are short-range entangled phases. Okay, so let me, you know, this is what I'm going to talk about, but let me sort of give you the result, what the representative surface state is, and the experimental fingerprint of these phases. The free fermion TI, you know, everybody in the world, almost everybody in the world, thinks about the representative surface state as the single Dirac cone or odd number of Dirac cones, except for a few exceptional people in this room, perhaps, who might say T Fafian, T Moore Reed. And then there's a T, we already saw there's a transport signature. If you break time reversal of the surface, the shift of the Hall conductivity by half. Now, associated with that, there's a shift of the thermal Hall conductivity, of the quantized thermal Hall conductivity by half from an integer. If you put in a proximity coupling to a superconductor, it leads to a gapped surface superconductor, but with exotic Meyer modes and the vortices, blah, blah, blah. You know, most of current condensed matter physics is on the stop line, right? So I want to focus on the bottom 2 lines. So there's 2 kinds of topological paramagnets. We have a geeky name for these, ET, MT, and EFMF, for reasons that will become clear. So a representative surface state is a symmetry preserving intrinsically topologically ordered state, Z2 spin liquid, you know, toric code, I guess. In one case, the unusual thing about it is that the E and M particles are both Cramer's doublets. That's not allowed with time reversal in strict 2 dimensions, but it's allowed at the surface of this topological insulator. And in the other case, it's a Z2 spin liquid, the toric code, where E and M and epsilon are all fermions, right? Which again is prohibited with time reversal in strict 2 dimensions, but can occur at the surface of this 3D topological paramagnets. And again, there's T-breaking transport signatures. In this first case, there's nothing. You know, If you just deposit a ferromagnet and measure transport, it'd be indistinguishable from silicon, right? But in the second case, sigma xy is zero, but kappa xy in units of the quantum of thermal conductance is four. So this gives you at least a partial distinction. It gives you a distinction between these three phases, and it gives you a partial distinction from totally boring band insulators. Now, a complete distinction is obtained by doing something else. When you deposit a superconductor, let's say you deposit a gap S-wave superconductor on the surface of these topological paramagnets, then the resulting phase diagram admits a phase with no topological order or nothing, but this resulting phase is very, very weird. It becomes a nodal superconductor with four Dirac nodes. Right? So this is an amazing phenomenon where you take your Mohr translator, your paramagnet, you deposit a gap S-wave superconductor at the surface, and you know, one of the phases that can result at the surface from that is a nodal superconductor, right? With four nodes, and that's something that will be visible in photo emission and things of that sort. Right? And okay, so those are the results. Let me now give you a sketch of the proof of these claims.
So what the charge sector is, what is it doing?
Well, the charge is just gap. It's just Mohr translator. It's just gap. Yeah.
Trivial.
Yeah.
And these n equals 8, that, you don't get that from all your projections,
do
you?
Or do you? No. Yeah, so time reversal acts very non trivially on these four Dirac cones. So let me give you a sketch of the proof. You know, this 35-minute talk is not enough to give the details. Yeah. Yeah. It is. Yeah. I'll get to that towards the end of the talk. So let's start with the bulk electromagnetic response. Now, for any insulator, there's the Maxwell term and the theta term, and we already discussed, and time reversal theta goes to minus theta, and this periodicity in an electronic system, you know, theta going to theta plus 2 pi, so that only theta equals 0 and pi are consistent with time reversal. Now, in searching for new insulators, suppose there's, apart from the topological band insulator, suppose there's a yet another kind of insulator that also has theta equals pi, right? So then we can always combine it with the topological band insulator to make a new insulator which has theta equals 0, right? So in searching for new insulators, it's sufficient to restrict attention to insulators with theta equals 0. Right? We don't need to think about insulators with theta equals pi. So once we do this, we can always get new insulators with theta equals pi. 5 minutes? I'm going to speak really fast and loud. So let's restrict to theta equals 0. And let's ask about the symmetry properties of the bulk magnetic monopole, right? So the Witten effect tells us the monopole is charged theta over 2 pi, but since theta is zero, the monopole is electric charge zero, right? And at a time reversal, magnetic field is odd, so the monopole goes to an anti-monopole. You could worry about phase factors here, but those don't play no role. You can combine define a different time reversal operation by combining with a magnetic gauge transformation to set alpha equal zero. So the monopole at theta equals zero transforms trivially under both physical symmetries, both the U1 charge conservation and the time reversal. So it seems like we don't have very many options left for the monopole, right? So the only things to worry about are the statistics of the monopole, which in three dimensions can either be boson or fermion, right? So let's discuss these. So the claim that I'll make is that with the bosonic monopole, the only possibility for what can, the interesting thing that can happen is that you get these topological paramagnets with new root states and nothing else. Right? So you only get, the only states you get are the states that you inherit from boson SPT, and that too from neutral boson SPTs, where the neutral bosons are formed by taking composites of the electron. Now the fermionic monopole, this turns out to be a really interesting story, but in the end it gives you nothing. It turns out we can prove that it's impossible to have a fermionic monopole in strictly 3D interacting just short-range entangled topological insulators, but the proof is somewhat difficult, and so I'm not going to talk about it here. Okay, it's there in the appendix of our paper. All right. So let's think about the implications of the bosonic magnetic monopole for the surface effective field theory. We want to think in terms of the Landau-Ginzburg theory, an effective field theory for the surface, and then ask what this magnetic monopole means. So if we tunnel a monopole from the vacuum to the insulator, then the tunneling event will leave behind some surface excitation, and the surface excitation must have charge zero and must be a boson and must transform to its antiparticle under time reversal. So convenient surface termination to think about this surface effective field theory is to think about a surface superconductor, because then we can identify the monopole, the object left behind by the monopole, with a HC over E vortex, which is a boson, according to these things, and transforms trivially into an anti-vortex under time reversal. Okay? One can work elaborate on this, include all kinds of other complications, but this is the essential argument. So now that we've identified a trivial vortex, a HC over E vortex, we can now get rid of the superconductivity and think about a symmetry preserving state by condensing this HC over E vortex. And the result is an insulating state with intrinsic topological order, but since it's a condensate of HC over E vortices, the charge is quantized in units of E. Okay? So the resulting surface topological quantum field theory has this interesting property. Since the charge is quantized in units of E, every topological sector of the theory can be made electrically neutral. Right? You can always bind to the elementary excitation in each topological sector. Since the charge is quantized in units of E, I can always bind an integer number of electrons to neutralize it. Right? So the surface topological quantum field theory takes the form of some bunch of neutral quasiparticles, direct product with supplemented by a physical electron. Okay. Now, under time reversal, the charge cannot change. So time reversal, the action of time reversal is closed within this neutral sector. So this defines a consistent neutral boson topological quantum field theory supplemented by the presence of a physical electron. In particular, if there's anything non-trivial about the surface state, it all has to reside here. Okay? Which then immediately implies for us that the bulk SPT order is the same as for neutral bosons supplemented by the physical electron. Okay? So that's all there is to it. It's a very simple story. So if you want to have a neutral boson SPT in an interacting electronic system, you can always form neutral bosons out of electrons, form spins from the electrons, and let the spin form an SPT. And if, because I've assumed the strong spin orbit coupling, so the only symmetry is charge conservation and time reversal, the spin system only has time reversal symmetry. So this means that what I should be interested in are topological paramagnets that are protected by time reversal symmetry and nothing else. So then this means the classification of the 3D electron TI is the band insulator classification times the classification of these kinds of topological paramagnets. And this first thing is Z2, and then we need to know what the second thing is.
The second one don't have a U1.
It doesn't have U1, only have time reversal. So this is a problem that we've understood in the course of studying the bosonic SPT states. It turns out it's a bit more subtle than the group cohomology classification. There are extra states beyond group cohomology. So the answer is Z2 squared, and with two root states. And the two root states are conveniently characterized in terms of the surface topological order, which is a deconfined Z2 gauge theory. And in the first case, both E and M are Kramers particles. And in the second case, and this is the state that's beyond cohomology, both E and M are fermions, and therefore epsilon is also a fermion. So that's all there is to it. So the final classification then is Z2 times Z2 squared, which is Z2 cubed. Okay, so that's the classification story, but now let's ask about the experimental fingerprint of these states.
It almost feels like you have spin charge separation in the bulk, which I imagine you don't have, but
We don't, yeah.
Can you explain why you don't? I mean, how I should think about it, like, exactly you don't, because you're gluing on some extra, well, I guess the bosonic SPT doesn't have anything interesting going on in the box.
Exactly, so, yeah.
At all.
I mean, at all,
it
yeah.
Just has t- I mean, there are excitations which are transformed into time reversal, but...
Yeah.
But the, which are not the electron, though.
No, but they are spins. They are like the holding chain. It's the spin one magnet. It's composite, sort of, the electrons.
No,
they'll definitely be, it's a gap quantum time magnet. There'll be a spin one, gap spin one mode. I mean, like the holding spin chain.
Well, but it's... No, I know. I just want to make sure I understand why that is in this case.
Yeah, can you say you have at most eight? Because you analyze what is possible on the surface, and those are possible. It seems that your eight kind of surface is possible.
Yeah.
And so if you do this argument alone, you say, okay, we have only eight consistent terminations, at the most eight. So yeah. Next question, whether these eight are realizable or not, maybe that's using your...
Yeah, so all eight are realizable. Okay. A couple layers are a good
sure.
example.
Okay.
Yeah, so let me talk about the experimental fingerprint, because this, I think, is at least I find it extremely interesting. So we have four insulators that have theta equals zero. There's the trivial insulator and three topological paramagnets. And there are four insulators that have theta equals pi, the topological band insulator and its combinations with the three topological paramagnets. Right? So how do we tell in experiments if, you know, somebody were to give me a sample and say, look, this may be a topological insulator, what are you going to do? The ideal thing to do would be to look for the symmetry preserving surface topological order, but then that experimentalist will never talk to me again. So what we want is something that's different, right? So the better thing to do is to break symmetry at the surface to produce a simple state without topological order, right? So if we can do that, then we can try to ask about the properties of that state. And it turns out that this procedure gives us a unique experimental fingerprint of all these phases. So let me describe this for the three root states. First, let's break time reversal explicitly to get a trivial surface. For the standard TI, we know what the story is. Sigma xy is half for the electrical Hall conductivity. Now, the topological paramagnets have theta equals zero in the bulk in the electromagnetic response, so surface sigma xy is zero. But the surface thermal Hall conductivity for the band TI, it's shifted from integer by a half. Actually, since this is a conference of experts, I should, for legal purposes, I should say it's mod 8. The topological paramagnet 1, where E and M are both Kramers, if you can find that state, then you get, in the absence of time reversal, you won't get any thermal Hall conductivity. In particular, the domain wall between two T-broken confined states doesn't have any gapless edge state. Okay? But the topological paramagnet 2, the way it's constructed is such that if it were realized in strict 2D, then it's realized with chiral central charge of 4. And so this then implies that when you break time reversal and confine the theory, and then you form a domain wall between the two T-broken states, you get a gapless edge modes with central charge 8. It's actually the edge state of the 2D E8 state. So kappa xy is 4. Next, let me talk about depositing the S-wave superconductor, a gapped S-wave superconductor, and inducing the quasiparticle nodes, right, which was the other signature. So the statement is that unlike the topological band insulator, where when you deposit the superconductor, you get a gap state, but with zero modes and vortices, blah, blah, blah. Here, for both kinds of topological paramagnets, both the root states, you get a gapless nodal superconductor with four Dirac cones protected by time reversal, which, once you deposit the superconductor, will be visible in a photoemission experiment, or tunneling, blah, blah, blah.
So it's an S-wave superconductor.
Yes. Yeah. But I'm not worrying about internal symmetry here. So the thing that I deposited was a gap superconductor. Okay. So the way to argue this is to argue in reverse. And to start with the superconducting theory at the surface with four Dirac nodes. So this argument is actually enormously powerful. Unfortunately, the chair is standing up. But it's really, really powerful argument, because this enables us to you know, go beyond the tenfold way for all the symmetry classes. So let me very quickly, if the chair will let me, very quickly do this. So let's start with this theory. And demand that time reversal acts by taking psi dagger with some sigma y. Right? Now, within free fermion theory, this kind of Dirac thing cannot be gapped out by adding time reversal symmetric perturbations. It turns out that there's the same theory at the surface of certain free fermion topological superconductors. But it turns out that interactions can induce a gap while preserving symmetry. So how do we argue that? So the way to argue that is to first enlarge the symmetry to U1 times T, with U1 just being, you know, fermion number conservation of the surface. So then we first add the symmetry, and then we get rid of it. Right? We get rid of it with a pairing term that breaks both U1 and T, but preserves some combination of the two. And then we get rid of the broken symmetry again. So we add a symmetry that's not there, we break it, and then we spontaneously disorder it. Right? And the way to disorder it is to proliferate vortices in this order parameter. But then, which vortex can proliferate is strongly constrained because in this Dirac theory, these vortices are zero modes. Right? So not all vortices can proliferate. And we can do a counting of the zero modes to see which vortex you can condense. Now, if you have four Dirac nodes, then it turns out you can condense strength two vortices. The strength one vortex, it turns out, is a Cramer's doublet, crudely speaking. And the resulting state that you get has Z2 topological order, where E and M are both Cramer's, and it's the surface topological order of one of the topological paramagnets. So once we did all this, we can get rid of this auxiliary U1 that we introduced and forget that it was ever there in the first place. Right? So that's the argument. And this is an elementary way of understanding a result that on topological superconductors was obtained using Walker-Wang methods by Witkowski, Chen, and Vishwanath. So let me say this, and then maybe I'll stop 2 more minutes. All right, thank you. So these various ways of thinking that I've introduced, you know, thinking about the bulk monopole, thinking about the surface vortex, thinking about the magnetoelectric effect, if you put all of these together, it turns out you can make dramatic progress in understanding interacting topological insulators. In particular, one can determine the stability to interactions of all the 3D free fermion topological insulators and superconductors within the tenfold way. So you take a state that is in the tenfold way that, according to free fermion theory, is in a topological insulator superconductor phase, and then is it stable to interactions? That we can answer. And in many cases, we can go beyond answering just that question and get the full classification, including states that don't have any free fermion counterpart. So first result of this sort was obtained last year by Witkowski, Chen, and Vishwanath, who showed that the class D3 superconductor with just time reversal, which in free fermions has a classification Z, that interactions reduce this to Z16. Okay? It's quite an amazing piece of work. I don't understand it directly, but we have a different way of understanding, a more elementary way of understanding it, which is essentially the argument that I gave. But now with eight Dirac cones, it turns out that the single vortex can be trivially, doesn't have any zero modes, and then you can just proliferate it. Okay. So the results for other symmetries is this table. You know, I'm trying to be Shougang here and produce tables of classifications and so on. So these are various members of things that are represented in the tenfold way. So the Orland-Zernbauer tenfold ways, each class actually, you know, describes a large number of symmetries, right? So for many representative examples, we can obtain what happens once you have interactions, how the stability to interactions. We can also count the distinct boson as PT states, things that are distinct from things that already exist in the stable free fermion things. And in many of these cases, we can get the complete classification. In this class D3, this is the result of the Berkeley group. I put a question mark because I personally don't understand whether their classification is complete, though Ashwin tells me not to worry about it. And in this case, we think the classification is complete, but we don't have a firm argument. In all the other cases, we have firm arguments. So as an example, So you have a superconductor with spin U1 and time reversal. That's this class A3. That's the Z classification in free fermion theory. It becomes Z4 cross Z2 with interactions. Right? And the Z4 is what happens to the Z, and the extra Z2 are boson as PT states. There's some amazing new insights that we obtained in the course of doing this work. The first is that, studying this boson as PT is one of the nice things that we learned is that you can have a surface that preserves all symmetries but has topological order, right? And many of us wrote papers on interacting electron, the topological band insulator, how its surface can be gapped and you get surface topological order. But it turns out that in some of these cases, at least in one example, there is no such symmetry preserving surface topological order. So the surface is guaranteed to be gapless with arbitrarily strong interactions so long as you preserve all the symmetries. So that's in the case of superconductor with spin SU2 and time reversal, the most elementary member of the classification, where you just have two Dirac cones at the surface, one for each spin. Finally,
so you have no vortex or anything that's trivial to
do with that. No, it's SU2. So if you break the SU2, you can do it. There's a very simple argument for this, which I don't have time to present. Finally, this body of work also, gives us a new part-on construction of these topological paramagnets, which suggests possible realistic models, perhaps, and perhaps even material identifications, and that's what we're working on now. But I don't know if there's any reason to be as optimistic that progress on this will be as dramatic as it has been in all the other questions, but we hope so. Anyway, that's about it. Thank you. Yeah?
Do you have any love for the class T square equal to 1? Only it's a superconductor, but it's just a T square equal to 1.
T square equals 1. No.
Why that's harder?
No, we didn't think about it. I mean, we just restricted to some simple things that we could easily do. Our goals are quite different from what you and many others have asked me many times. What we cannot do is to, you pulled out a group from your head, a symmetry group from your head, and then you want to know what the answer is, we won't be able to do it. Right? We're only trying to get answers in some cases, right? Not trying to develop a systematic approach that can handle all cases.
I think that case is interesting because free fermion classification is trivial, but in interaction classification, you can find some new faces that cannot be realized in any photonic system. So it's kind of some issue.
Yeah, so far, we in this table that I showed you, we didn't find any such state. But,
I just wonder if you could sort of quickly review the logic for why there aren't more than these 8 phases.
Yeah.
I understood vaguely that you have some distinction between 8 phases, so you can kind of argue they're distinct from one another, but how do you know there aren't any others?
Oh, because I said, so the logic was the following. Let's go back. So first we say that if you're searching for new things, it's enough to restrict to theta equals 0. So then we only need to find all the states that have theta equals 0. Right? So theta equals 0, this monopole is severely constrained. It's basically trivial. It's a dead object. Right? That part is slightly non-trivial because it could have been a fermion. Right? But we can show that it cannot be a fermion. Okay? So then it's really dead. So once the monopole is dead, the only thing that can happen at the surface is that this vortex that's left behind, you do the monopole, it's a H C over E vortex, and it's a dead boson. Right? And then you condense it to get an insulator, and that insulator has charge quantized in units of E. Right? Which means that it has this structure of a neutral boson topological quantum field theory times 1c, and this sector is closed under time reversal. Right? So anything non-trivial about the state has to come from this stuff.
Right? Yeah, how do you know that that's not that aren't more, how do you know the complete classification of the bosonic SPTs?
Oh, so the boson SPT, that's okay. That's this, you're asking about the Z2 squared business? Yeah. So this we understand, right? The so for instance, so here within cohomology, it can be attacked within cohomology, and they find a Z2 classification, so they find this state. Right? Now you can ask, how can cohomology fail? Right? So the only route for it to fail is if the surface becomes this one half of the C8 state. So that's the only thing that can be beyond cohomology, and that's the state. So that's it. Yeah. 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 Yeah, okay, so, no. So this is actually very interesting because if you break SU2 symmetry and then you try to derive a sigma model for this ferromagnet, it turns out it's this O3 sigma model with a Hopf term at level one. Yeah, but so the claim we're making based on analyzing this topological, the possible topological ordered surface is that this, as a field theory, this O3 sigma model with a Hopf term at level one, where the n vectors odd under time reversal, that does not have a symmetry preserving topological ordered phase. Right? Actually, there's a more stronger statement that we can make, which from a field theory point of view is very non-trivial, I think. If you take the O3 sigma model with a Hopf term at level two, right? Looks like there's no obstruction to realizing that theory in two dimensions. Right? Level two, fermion is a boson, blah, blah, blah. But it turns out you can't do that because the theory with level two is equivalent to the theory, it's equivalent to this topological paramagnet, so it cannot be realized. You know, this Hopf angle of 4π is also forbidden in 2D, right? Which is a weird result. Yeah, I don't understand in terms of skirmion quantum numbers, but my understanding right now is indirect. It goes through this SPT. I don't have a direct field theoretic argument.
Explicit intrinsic.
Sorry, just intrinsic field theory description because I didn't.
Sorry?
Intrinsic field theory description.
It means
an ill-defined
theory with no cutoff.
You mean on the surface or the bulk? Or
in
the bulk, an explicit field theory description. Or no,
just intrinsic field theory.
Intrinsic.
Just field theory.
Just field theory.
Yeah, okay. Some level, yeah, though there are people in the audience who don't like it. That, you know, but it doesn't matter. You know, we can get all these results without talking about things that people don't like.
You can tell us the answers in
words. You don't need a. At least for this, so this BF type theory, the. The point is, we're not needed to use that for anything. Right? We've been able to answer the question through completely elementary.
In theoretical physics, actions are occasionally useful. It's not a ridiculous question to ask if there's an action for one of these theories.
No, we have Hamiltonians. In solid state physics, Hamiltonians.
I think you're talking about theta terms.
Sorry.
What theta terms you need in action.
No, that's
not a ridiculous question.
No, I'm not saying it's a ridiculous question. I'm just saying that if you, for the theta term, yes, that there was an action. Right?
Yeah.
But if you want a Hamiltonian, so for instance, for this beyond cohomology state, is exactly soluble lattice model. You know, is that not good enough?
No, that's good, but you didn't show it. So.
You know, it's 35 minutes. What do you want me to do?
No, that's an acceptable answer to his question.
I don't want to be there to answer the question, but I didn't know what it meant.
Okay.
I'm just meaning to say that perhaps there is some kind of a topological term. We can label those cars, but they are explicit construction for those theory using topological term. Although I know there is no topological order, but I suppose.
Yeah, so the BF is an attempt in that direction, but look, I can give you a physical sort of picture of what's going on in the bulk, and there's various ways in which we can implement it. Right? Well, let me take the case of the boson topological insulator, where we understand things the best. So in the case of the boson topological insulator, the bulk, you know, because it's an insulator, you think about the bulk as a condensate of vortex loops. Right? And these vortex loops, that's a non-trivial, so the simplest case, yes, if you have a spin, XY spin model, think of that as bosons. And then it's in a paramagnetic phase. Right? So one of the SPT phases that it can be in, you think about this paramagnet as a soup of vortices, where inside each vortex, there's an AKLT chain. Right? So that's the physical description. Right? Now, we can write down lattice actions that incorporate this physics. Right? Now, Paul, I think, wants us to write down continuum field theory.
Well, I don't care. I just want a precise formulation of theory. And you tell me there's a precise lattice model. I'm happy with that.
There are precise lattice models in some cases. There's a couple of layer construction.
I'm happy with any of these things.
All right, let's thank the speaker.
Executive.